Anybody hear me? Okay, my name is Danny Arts from .se. I'm the CEO of the Swedish Registry. Welcome to Stockholm. Normally I try to get people to Stockholm by saying welcome to sunny Stockholm. We will have a campaign site a couple of weeks from now about the Kaminsky book, and then you will know a bit more why I call it sunny Stockholm. this DNSSEC workshop and IPv6 workshop is actually a part of a bigger conference, the Internet Days, which is held tomorrow and on Wednesday. And when we started to prepare for that workshop, we saw that we had so much interesting material, test results and experience we wanted to share with you, that we started to plan for a small and minor workshop in advance of the Internet Days. At that time, we thought we would have about 30 people coming, discussing DNSSEC. And after sending one mail out to some of the colleagues, we ended up with nearly 150. So you could see that IPv6 and DNSSEC is a hot topic. It's maybe a sign of the time that so many people are willing to come to Stockholm, even though it's not summer. What we're going to do here today is very much talk about how to deploy, not so much if to deploy. I think ICANN meetings would be more appropriate if you want to discuss if. What we do here is pretty much we try to make it happen. As you know, we were the first ones to implement and deploy DNSSEC in our zone on a top-level domain. And from there on, we've been gathering more and more experiences of how to handle DNSSEC. And I'm very thankful that so many people of you are here today, and I think it's a rather unique occasion where so much experience and knowledgeable people are here. So take the chance to discuss, to talk, to share experience, and ask questions in the different workshops. When we started to look at our program, we saw that it's, again, very vast. A lot of people that want to say something and can say something. So let's see if we have to do it one more time, maybe a couple of months from now, when we are a bit more in the deployment process. Would like to start off with Steve as an introduction.
Let's see. Well, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Steve Crocker. I feel very honored, actually, to be back here. I was honored a year and a half ago, approximately, to be part of the formal launch of DNSSEC in Sweden. The work that's going on here is not only important in Sweden, but it is exhibiting leadership that is vitally important for the entire internet. It's just a major credit to everyone here, particularly the team at .se that is pushing this very hard. In the U.S., we have we're putting a lot of money into trying to get DNSSEC deployed, and it's moving forward, but it's not moving forward nearly with the speed with which it's happening here. So I think that there's some important lessons that we need to look at, and it's one of the reasons why I'm delighted to be here. I have been to Sweden in the summer once, but it seems that whenever security comes up, I'm always invited when it's cold and dark, which seems to fit with the subject matter. Danny mentioned in a very low-key way that the focus here is on how to get DNSSEC deployed, not whether to do it. And it is clear from the long history, and I'll say in a minute something about the long history of DNSSEC, that there is quite a distinction to be made between the design process, the sort of solving the major technical problems, and getting the design written down, which is hard enough, versus the still additionally hard problem of actually getting it deployed in the field. And we have somewhat less experience throughout the internet community with how to do deployments properly. We have rather more experience with the design process, and a lot of the deployments are easy. They take off like wildfire, but not all of them, and this is one that isn't. So I have to add to the appreciation that I have for the work going on here, for the perseverance, for the determination, for the leadership that is being exhibited here, and the technical excellence that supports that. Even with the best intentions, there's some difficulties along the way. Last year, it was discovered that there were some glitches in the some of the routers at home that prevented packets, proper packets, from coming back in. Patrick Wallstrom did an excellent piece of work surveying things. We've had the opportunity to follow up on that work, and I'll say a few words briefly about it in the session that I'm going to be in the afternoon, which we did jointly with Nominet, and built on the work that was done here by Patrick. And I assume you had maybe some help. I'm not so I don't know who all participated. A very, very nice piece of work, which set a very a firm basis for doing further testing, and was also supportive and helped inform the other tests that we did. I said I'd say something about the history. The cash poisoning was the impetus for being very concerned, and the time frame was in the very early 1990s. And I remember getting a call from my friend Vint Cerf saying, we have a serious problem here, because a demonstration had been carried out and had been brought to very high levels of attention inside the U.S. government and caused quite an alarm. And so we started an urgent project right away to fix this problem. We understood that we should add cryptographic signatures to the system, and it's just a question of doing a little bit of hard work, and then we would get it. That was started in, as I said, in the early 1990s, and here we are in a different century, and we're still pushing on it and trying to get it going. So with that, I will break off and again say thank you to everybody who's here. I look forward to the interactions during the day. The program is extraordinarily rich and full of important things. I looked at it and I was instantly disappointed, in a sense, that there were three parallel tracks. I try very hard to be in three places at once, but I'm not able to do it very well. And so today I will focus on wherever I happen to be, and then I'll try to pick up the rest of it. Now, my friend Vint is I have observed, is able to be in three places at once.
Well, good morning, everyone. Now comes the interesting challenge of finding my charts, which are hiding somewhere in this PC. There we are. Thank you. Well, I'm not going to take a great deal of time, because as Steve points out, it's really the important part of the program is in the parallel tracks. I'm here representing Google. I'm Google's chief internet evangelist, which is an interesting title. I didn't ask for that title. I actually asked for, they said, what title do you want? And I asked for Archduke, but they thought that didn't fit very well with their nomenclature, so I ended up being the chief internet evangelist. So I'm here in part as a cheerleader for both DNSSEC and IPv6, and I'm going to focus a little more on the IPv6 part in my opening remarks. This is what the internet looked like 30 years ago. There were only three networks. A mobile packet radio network, a satellite network which spanned the U.S. Across the eastern part of the United States, the western part of Europe, and the Atlantic Ocean, and the ARPANET, which had its first European connections in Norway and in England, but the Norwegian connection by satellite actually landed at a ground station in Tanum, Sweden. So you had a kind of indirect and early association, those of you from Sweden. had an indirect and early connectivity to the nascent internet. Of course, when you go fast forward to 1999, 22 years later, it got a lot bigger and more complex. This is a chart showing the topology of the internet as rendered by Bill Cheswick, who I think was at Bellcore at the time, just looking at the global routing tables and then showing what the topological connectivity is and coloring the different autonomous systems so you could get some feeling for the complexity of the net. The fact is that it has been growing a lot. And today, we really can't see the entire extent of the internet because many of the hosts are hiding behind firewalls in companies and other institutions. But the ones that are visible are more than a half billion that have IP addresses that are dedicated and domain names that are visible. And the number of users is approaching 1.5 billion on a worldwide basis. That's still only about 22% of the world's population. So as a chief internet evangelist, I feel like I have 80% of the work still to be done. But nonetheless, it's a significant number of users. In Europe, the average penetration is about 50%. In the United States, it's about 73%. But the absolute number of users in China is on the order of 250 million. Out of that 1.5 billion across the world. That's more than there are users in the United States, which are about 240 million. So sometime this year, probably in the middle of the year, the paths crossed. So the network is getting bigger, and many, many more devices are showing up on the net, things that you don't normally associate with being part of the net, like refrigerators and picture frames and things that look like telephones, but they're really voice over IP boxes. And even an internet-enabled surfboard, which someone in San Diego, California, built so that he could surf the internet while he was waiting for the next big wave to come in the Pacific Ocean. I thought I would just illustrate for you another phenomenon which is becoming popular. This is a sensor network which I have installed in my house. It's running IPv6. It's on an 802.15.4 network. It's collecting data, temperature, humidity, light levels, every 5 minutes and accumulating that information. My original intent in doing this was just to analyze the heating and ventilation and air conditioning system over the course of a year to figure out whether it was performing more or less as it was supposed to. And rather than having anecdotal reports of a bedroom being too cold or too hot, I thought it would be better to actually have the raw data. Sensor networks are becoming increasingly common as part of the internet. And although it may not be very obvious because the letters are too small on